thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good to see you, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our guest, chairman of the Rhode Island Republican Party, Brandon Bell. Thank you for joining us, Brandon.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
After hours of debate, the General Assembly this week signed off on Governor Raimondo's truck toll plan. Opponents say tolls will hurt business, and they fear tolls will be extended eventually to passenger cars. After the House vote on Wednesday, House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello told me that no bill is perfect.
But when you're 50th in the country with the worst infrastructure, and that's the number one consideration for businesses when they consider whether or not they're going to come to Rhode Island or grow in Rhode Island, we absolutely had to address it. This is good for business, and this is going to move our state forward.
Brandon Bell, you've been very critical of this truck toll proposal, calling it a job killer. But how about the point from the speaker that no proposal is perfect, but Rhode Island's infrastructure is in such dire shape that it's important to move ahead right now?
Look, once a new government revenue source is created, it's likely to be expanded. In this particular instance, I don't know how the speaker even says. Let's talk about what RIPEC said. As an independent, someone who's actually an independent organization friendly with the speaker, they say real jobs will be lost, that more cost-efficient ways to do this. The recent Hassenfeld poll talked about 58% in favor of reallocating. So I don't know what he's talking about when he says there are no more effective and easier ways to do it. We have the revenue. We have a spending problem.
Well, I don't know if the RIPEC study said jobs will be lost. It did raise some questions about whether this plan will generate enough money in the short term. But Maureen, what do you make of the legislature's passage and the criticism from Republicans that this has moved too quickly and that the consequences will be adverse?
Well, I consider this kind of a win-win in the sense that I do agree with the speaker. I think the plan is the most solid that we can think of given the circumstances, and I think it's the right thing to do to move this ahead so we can get moving ahead. On the other hand, I think it's great that there's a loyal opposition. I feel as if, although I may not agree with the position of the Republican legislators, I think what we're seeing here is a coalescence of legislators who down the road might do something about this solid one-party state and offer on other issues a different perspective.
Scott, one thing that's really interesting to me in this truck toll debate is that there's no middle ground. People say it's either going to be really good for the economy or it's going to be disastrous for the economy. What do you make of that?
Well, I just think that it's become a partisan political issue, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously, Republicans do want to make some hay out of this issue, and they think they have public opinion on their side. So that's something that you just always have to be cognizant of in politics. That's going to happen. On the other hand, the chairman says that once you put a tax in, it never comes off. Well, that's not true. Bruce Sundlin's tax on the rich after the banking crisis was repealed. As we saw, the utility taxes also on business have been repealed. So I don't think that just because you put this in now, it's going to be extended to cars or somewhere else. In fact, if a Republican governor gets elected, maybe they'd repeal it.
Let's move on to talk briefly about the New Hampshire primary. The two outsiders won this week, Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Bernie Sanders. Brandon Bell, what impact do you see Trump's win in New Hampshire having on the Republican side of the presidential race?
I think his really resounding victory shows that he's the antithesis of Barack Obama, and that's why he's getting the kind of support that he's getting. People have been miserable for the last 7 years, and they like what they're hearing out of Donald Trump. It's a fractured primary right now. It's a field, rather. I think, what are we down to, 6? I haven't watched the news this morning. Maybe we're down to 5 at this point. But I think that it'll be very interesting going forward with getting 35%, or even in the high 20s. You know, he's, again, we're only in proportional delegate states right now. And really, there's only, I think, in the entire month of February, including South Carolina and then the Nevada caucus, South Carolina primary and the Nevada caucus, you're only talking about 5% of the delegates. So Donald Trump will only have a small minority, in terms of delegates. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out with Chris Christie getting out and whether or not Marco Rubio gets some of that support with Jeb Bush staying in.
Scott, our friend Brown University professor Wendy Schiller tweeted that it's important to remember history, and many New Hampshire winners have not become the eventual presidential nominee. Do you think Trump and Sanders have the legs to go the distance?
More have become president than have not. That's certainly for sure. And I know Professor Schiller loves Hillary Clinton, but the fact of the matter is that she performed dismally in New Hampshire, losing by 22 points, losing every major demographic group except for white people who make more than $200,000 a year. That's just a blowaway, given the fact that her husband and she won that primary in 2008. Her husband was the comeback kid in 1992. So I think that's a problem. On the Republican side, once again, on both sides, we see an anti-establishment fervor out there. And the problem for the Republican establishment is that once there's four or five or three other candidates in there, Trump is going to be allowed to win election after election with about a third or so of the vote. And that's a real problem for the party in the long run. But let's face it, we're just at the start of this. March is the crucial primary month here when on both sides you're picking about 50% of the delegates.
Maureen, what is your takeaway from New Hampshire?
My takeaway is it is only one election. And I think that as far as Bernie Sanders is concerned, he did very well. I would expect what's going to happen is that as he moves south and west, his strength will diminish. Also, if you listen carefully to him, he still talks about his message. He doesn't talk about what he's going to do. My take will be that as he loses support, she will gain support. The superdelegates will kick in. And in that sense, I think she'll go on to get the nomination. As far as the Republicans are concerned, I think they're in for a brokered convention, because I think the more Trump holds on to, say, 35% of the delegates, I think they're not going to easily give up. I don't think the establishment is going to turn over their delegates to him. So we may be in for what many will regard as a kind of a interesting dilemma. I don't know what the GOP will think about it. I think we're going to see a brokered convention, and we could see someone emerge that isn't even in the picture now.
Brandon Bell, I'd like to ask you about Providence Mayor Jorge Elorza and his first State of the City address. The mayor painted an upbeat picture despite how Providence faces continued fiscal uncertainty and an ongoing dispute with city firefighters. Do you think the mayor's optimistic tone was justified?
I think he has to put on a happy face. And that's what politicians do. That's what they're supposed to do when they're doing their job. I'm not so sure it's such a great picture, though. You know, with the large budget deficits, the unfunded pension liabilities and health insurance, he's got some serious problems. There needs to be some oversight, I think, by the state. I think the fact that we have an acting director of revenue and not an actual director of revenue, there hasn't been any action. But I think Mayor Elorza is doing what he needs to do to keep people positive and optimistic. But I don't think it's such a bright, sunny picture right now.
What do you think, Maureen?
I agree with the chairman. I also think that there are signs on the horizon that there'll be some economic development kicking in. But I totally agree that the long-term structural problems, particularly when it comes to the unions and the firefighters, are there, and they're not going away anytime soon.
And quickly, Scott?
Well, I just think that the governor, I hope, in the State House will try to step in a little bit, as Link Chafee did when a lot of cities and towns had problems and had budget commissions, Woonsocket, East Providence, West Warwick. In his administration, we haven't seen much reaction or much help from Smith Hill at this point.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable, Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Rhode Island Republican Chairman Brandon Bell.
Thank you again.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.